true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
So I'm here to, for all actors everywhere.
Jump right into the actor complaint.
No, this is a good one.
Oh, good.
To say, like, that thing that you tell yourself as an actor sometimes, like, if I'm right for it, there's nothing I can say wrong. Like, you don't have to be so worried about, like, I have to do everything they want and make sure. Because if you're right for it, we'll work for you, too.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the process of begging an actor. I told you about this. Begging him to please say yes. In fact, we have a Zoom call later today to please say yes, talk him into doing the play. He wants to. He's very excited about it. It's a financial issue, and we're going to brainstorm some other things he might be able to do to make it work. And I was very excited that he said he was interested in having that conversation.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm happy about that.
Nice.
But my point being, for the actors, it's like, last week I was like, hey, actors, don't be dicks. This time I'm like, actors, remember, you're awesome. We need you too. And if you're the right one, we'll work hard.
We'll figure it out.
We can't do everything. Like, I can't, like, promise you things I don't have.
Yeah.
And it may not work, but I'll try hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. I mean, I think you can lose it not by not being perfect, but by being a dick. Like, that's,
yeah.
Like, if you're a good actor, but a dick,
yep.
Then we're probably still going to be like, God, you better be the most right person that I did. But even then, man, so it's just not worth it.
Nope. For me,
it's just not worth it.
Yeah. For me, I'm very, very clear on this particular point. Like, if you're a dick, I've got, nothing's worth it. It's not, but that's because I did that. Like, I learned that one through experience. Like, I directed two shows in LA, and I just won't again. If I knew this, there were two people involved in this one production I'm thinking of who were both pains in the ass. And I was in that place where I was like, well, I'll say yes because I want the money.
Right.
I will not be doing that again.
Yeah.
Because if you have to deal with someone in rehearsal over 2 months and they're a dick, like a real dick, not just like a person with needs, but like a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. That's your life. That's every day.
Mm-hmm. That's you going home from rehearsal every day, already underpaid, feeling like shit.
It's like, I won't.
And dreading the next day.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like if it's between, like, you're going to eat dinner and you're not going to eat dinner, like if you can't eat and you got to work with a dick, sometimes maybe you'd take that job. But if I could eat, mm-mm.
Yeah. If you have any choice in the matter, it's good to.
It's just so hard on me. I think it's not really. That's another thing I learned by dating Eric. I'm always reminded, like, I have a lower threshold of pain tolerance than he has around certain emotional processes and certain things in life.
Uh-huh.
I'm just like, no, I'm not doing that. It's not worth it to me to do that. And he's like, why? I'm like, because it hurts my body the whole time and I don't want to be in pain.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay. Well, I don't want you in pain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, we're different. You strong man. Me, sensitive lady.
Yeah.
Anyway, good thing to remember. How are you?
I'm pretty good. What's going on? All right. So I had, you know, we're in a massive COVID upswing right now. It's like brutal.
We are.
I don't know if you know this. Oh, it is all the, you know, the wastewater, they analyze wastewater is how they do it. And it shows like what's going on.
Mm.
And there's like predictions that are like, oh, this would be the second worst spike we've had the entire time. Now, worse as in infections, not as in deaths.
Right, because the new strain is not as murderous.
Right, and also most of the people have
vaccinated.
You know, have vaccinated, which really reduces death, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yeah, people aren't getting super sick, but everybody's getting it. Like, it's just like, oh, it's just, I even saw like one thing that was like, this week it is possible that, you know, if we average out the next month or so, one in four people is going to get it in the United States. Like, it's that significant. Anyway.
It's not just in this area.
No, it's the entire country. There's maps that are like where it looks bad. and it's purple all the way across, except for Oregon, which is underreported, which is why they don't have Oregon purple. Oregon is gray because they don't have the data or whatever. It's, yeah, it's everywhere. It's, I give that context to say what's been going on in my system for the last week. I went to a New Year's Eve gathering, just a late afternoon one, not even a night one. And then a couple days later, someone tested positive, like really a couple days later. But then you're like, oh, well, that just means they weren't necessarily virulent when they were at the party. But then the host tested positive, who was hanging out with that person who did test positive. I was at this party. I didn't really hang out with patient zero. I said hi, and I think I hugged them. Hello. I knew them. They're not dead. They're still with us. They're great. They're fine. And then another friend, then the partner of the host, who's my friend, got sick, but was testing negative, and then just tested positive first time ever. Anyway, all the dominoes are falling. And whenever that's happening to me, I start every, you know, I wake up with a slight headache. I have COVID, you know, and I go through that.
Okay.
So I've been doing that a lot this week. And I've also just been really noticing that the, like the data and the things that are, it's got me anxious. Like, it's not just like I'm being very rational and being like, well, I should, and I should, I think everyone, I'm going to say it, everyone start masking up in public for a while, for another couple of weeks, couple months. It's just, it's so, you're going to get it otherwise. It's just a given. But the other side of that is my anxiety around it. Like, I'm talking about it a lot and I'm like, maybe I won't go to that thing. I'm going to cancel that plan. I'm not going to do that thing. I'm going to stay away from those people. I'm going to. So I'm just calling it out that.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I felt bad, but I couldn't figure out even what the symptoms were. Like I felt like I had sludge in my veins, not tired. I just felt thick. I felt full, even though I hadn't eaten that much and I'd pooped. Let me be just clear about that. It wasn't that I was backed up. I felt full. I felt a little confused and I was really got concerned again. Of course, took another test, still negative, and it wasn't really COVID-like symptoms. And then I realized that I think I had gassed myself because I'd accidentally left the burner on with the flame off while I was eating breakfast. And then as soon as it was discovered, I, you know, turned and opened all the windows but I think I gassed myself a little bit.
Did you feel better once you opened the windows?
No, I felt better this morning. Like, I didn't feel bad right away, but I started feeling like shit for much of the day. And I just couldn't figure it out. It was such a vague feel like shit feeling.
Yeah.
But that one, you can't even describe it. You're just like, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
I just don't feel, I'm not necessarily tired. I don't actually have a headache. I'm not nauseous, but my system just feels wrong.
Did you eat something you were allergic to maybe that you don't know?
Maybe. I made a spaghetti squash the other day and I've been eating the leftovers of that. So, and that's the only new thing I've been eating.
But no cashews or chickpeas?
Cashews are fine for me. Chickpeas are not.
Oh, I thought it was cashews. I forgot.
No, it was chickpeas.
Okay.
Anyway.
Alcohol?
No, hardly any. I'd had it the day before. No, a couple days before, like 3 days before I had a beer.
Yeah. Sugar?
No. It was a weird feeling. And I honestly think it might have been the gas. Like, it just took a while for my system to kind of be like, ugh. We can ask if we feel like it. We want to get into that. But I'm sharing with everybody that I'm naming my anxiety around the COVID upswing and that there's both truth in it and panic in it. Like, they're both true. The panic I don't want to do, the truth I want to face. That's how I'm doing.
I gotcha. Rock on.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel great today. Oh. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, I feel good. I don't have COVID. I know I don't have COVID.
Yeah. Do you get relief from the sort of serenity prayer of it all?
When I remember to do that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't really engaged in that. I didn't even do I could have even done my Gabriel prayer, which kind of has a serenity prayer in it.
It'll probably make you feel better.
Yeah, I haven't done it. So maybe I'll do it after we're done here today.
I also like to just think about the serenity prayer. It helps me a lot. Like, what about the COVID uptick do I have control over? Okay, I can't control that, like, lots of people around me might be having COVID right now. I can control wearing a mask. I can control going out.
Mm-hmm.
I can control taking extra immunity stuff, whatever that is. And then like the parts of the mind that start to grip onto anxiety, because something, my favorite thing about anxiety that I learned through healing school is like, it's always a red flag for a different emotion.
Mm.
They teach that like anxiety is not a feeling. It's a, hey, something's going on under here and you don't know what it is yet. And so for me with anxiety, I always go, well, what am I feeling that is scaring me so much unconsciously that I don't want to feel it? So I'm having anxiety instead.
Mm.
Like I'll give you some examples of recent ones. Like it comes up like around, I have so much to do, right, with the theater project. And I've been also doing some staging stuff. So there's just like a lot on my plate. So it's like, I'll look at the fear of people will judge me if I do a bad job. That's a fear I have that like, if I don't drop into that fear and then do a little like, oh, is that true? Does that matter? Like I'm feeling into it right now and I have no anxiety while I feel that fear.
Right.
But if I pop up above the fear in my body, in my experience of the fear, I'm just like sitting above it. Then it's like, anxious, like unspecified, undiagnosed anxiety that's like vague and I don't know, there.
Are you saying that that kind of indicates that that's not actually the fear, that there's something else or more rooted that mm-hmm. it that is causing that? It's not necessarily the part, the sort of narrative part, but there's a deeper rooted
it's like
thing that's being...
The way I'd frame it is when anxiety has us... Anxiety is like a frequency that has us up and out. It's up, it's here in the head.
Yeah.
And up here. And we're not really connected down and in grounded.
Mm-hmm.
So then if there's a way you could breathe into, or for me, it's like I breathe into my belly. Usually before I can fully relax and not be gripped by anxiety, there's some feeling in the heart or the belly that has to be felt and faced. And then I go, oh, I'm nervous that people, whatever it is, I have to face it, right? Let me give you a better example. Maybe this will help more. Oftentimes it's like, I'm anxious. I'm up here feeling anxiety on my shoulders and up in my head and out of my body because I'm anxious that things won't get done. There's so many things that get done. How will they get done? I'm anxious. So if I get busy taking action toward them getting done, I'm not anxious because
mm-hmm.
I'm getting them done. So they're getting done. And that quells the anxiety. But the point is, the anxiety is pointing us to a feeling that needs to be felt or an action that needs to be taken. So like, I wonder what feeling you could drop into that if you were to, in your belly and heart, that if you were to go in there and be with it, would take this other version of anxiety, this up here version, down from a 10 to like a 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't obviously have an intellectual answer to that, which I don't want to have, but...
Well, is it like
that? Is
what is it?
I don't. Yeah, I don't know. I was sort of trying to settle into it, and then I got impatient and popped back up into my head.
Because, like, here's some ideas, right? That one fear could be if I'll get it, and then I'll feel really bad, and I'm afraid of the feelings I'll feel. Another would be I'll get it, and then I won't be able to go to this audition.
Yeah, it's the I won't be able to do the things I have planned.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so I would feel into like, I'm afraid I won't be able to do the things I have planned. If you want to go there now, we could just do this.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of getting it again. I'll just be like, yeah, I guess I'll be sick and I can watch movies all day for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you feel into, I'm afraid I won't be able to do the things I have planned?
I mean, that feels right just because part of me wants to get it like right now, because then the timing would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if I'm going to get it, give it to me now, right this second.
And that's you trying to control the anxiety.
Right. And knowing that there's no, like, it wouldn't fuck up anything for the next week and a half.
I know, but another way that you could make sure not to, or do your best not to fuck up the next week and a half is feel into this feeling.
Yeah.
It's just not as fun as thinking you get to control it. It's like you might just repeat to yourself internally, I don't want to not be able to do my things. I don't want to not be able to do my things. I won't be okay if I can't do my things. Maybe another thing to look at is what's the form of not okay that'll take place if you can't do the things? Like, will you lose the job? Will you have a harder time at the job? Like, what's so bad about, what if you couldn't do 4 days of a thing?
None of it actually really matters that much. Like, I have a trip planned with Denise in like 2.5 weeks.
Mm.
2 weeks. I guess it's 2 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've already paid for the place we're going. And if we couldn't go, I'd lose that money. So that's the one thing that I think I have a little bit of like, oh, that'll happen. And then after that, you know, I start rehearsals a couple weeks later. So that gets in the way of that. But that's so far in the future, it doesn't fuck anything up.
Okay. You know that rationally, but is this part of you afraid that it could fuck things up?
Yeah. No, it is.
Yeah. So that's the part we want to feel into, the part of you that's like, it could fuck my whole experience up for the rehearsal process.
Hello, everybody. This is Editor Desmond. There is a moment coming up where I am asked to edit something out. I have had a conversation with Cassidy post-recording, and it is okay to share. So please don't get uncomfortable. Everything that is on this podcast is meant to be heard. Enjoy.
Well, all I can describe is that I feel it literally in my heart.
Mm. And what does it feel like in your heart? What's the sensation like?
It's just a little, like the heart feels like it's beating hard, and it feels a little like rushed almost. Feels.
Okay.
It doesn't hurt. It's not heavy. It just is kind of like aware of some sort of almost like air, wind.
Okay. Can you sink into that feeling even more so it gets a little bit worse?
Just aware of my distraction brain coming in and like pulling my attention out of there.
Hmm.
Don't look at it. Don't look. Don't look.
Mm-hmm. Try to feel the most uncomfortable part of it that part of you doesn't want you to feel. Almost like as a rebellion against that part that's trying to pull you out.
I mean, I'll say that the fear underneath it is honestly one I don't feel like sharing publicly, but I'll share with you.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Sure.
I'll just say, let's edit this part out, Desmond. I just said those words.
Yeah.
Denise and I are really trying to reconnect, and there's some struggle a little bit there.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if we don't go on this weekend, we're over.
Oh.
Well, and that's not true. And I know that's not true. It's completely not true, but that's the fear.
Yeah, but let's frame it like this. There's a part of you that knows the thing isn't true, but there's another part of you that really, really doesn't.
Yeah.
And that part of you that doesn't know the thing isn't true, we need to sit with that part.
Yeah.
We need to let it feel what it feels and say what it wants to say. Can we do that for another moment?
Yep.
Let's meet up with that part of you that doesn't know this thing that to your very smart brain is very, very obvious. It's not true. But this young part, for whatever reason, needs to say, like, I'm really scared that it's all going to go to shit.
Yeah.
Imagine that that part of you, as you feel it, connect with it, is talking to you, not to me, anyone else, but to you.
I mean, I don't really have, it's just kind of chaotic right now in there. I don't have words or anything. I can't really.
Chaotic in what way? What does it feel like?
It's hard to focus. Oh, just no.
What does it feel like?
I'm having trouble seeing it or knowing what's going on. I'm just sort of trying to like, hey, talk to me, part. And
yeah,
I'm not getting anything. I'm just not getting anything.
Okay, I'm going to help you if you want me to.
I would love it.
Okay. So the part of you, Cassidy, that is afraid blank will happen. Let's bleep. I'm going to say it. And then if you could bleep all these out, Desmond, that'd be great. The part of you, Cassidy, inside of you, if you want to be eyes closed so you could stay in touch with him, that would be great. This younger part of you that thinks like everything will fall apart with you and Denise, how old is this part of you?
It's like 15 or 16.
Yeah. And what happened when you were 15 or 16 that got you believing that something like this could make it all fall apart? Did something fall apart then?
I mean, I had a weird on and off situation with a girlfriend then, and it was kind of, we were all friends, and yet there was this other factor that was pulling her away from me, and then I felt like I was trying to like keep it together with very careful machinations. Couldn't really.
Mm. What was the other factor that was pulling her away?
Another friend of ours.
Like a guy she was interested in romantically?
Yeah, who had come to town every once in a while. He lived elsewhere, but he was a friend of all of ours.
Okay.
I mean, it was actually my first contact with polyamory, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And was it like that guy had something you didn't have, you thought?
Yeah, probably.
What was it? Why do you think she chose him instead of you?
Just something else, something flashier.
Yeah. I'm going to talk directly to this 15 or 16 year old part of you right now.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay. What should we call him?
I mean,
younger Cass?
He's Cass.
Okay.
Rather than Cassidy, for sure.
Okay, great. Okay. So, Cass, what did you believe about yourself when she left you for that guy?
I mean, I guess that's how it's supposed to, it's fine. I guess, you know, she gets to do what she wants to do. I sort of counted myself out. I believed that it didn't matter, or that I didn't matter.
So her needs matter, but not yours?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think she chose him, Cass, not you? What's your theory about that?
I don't know. He was more interesting.
More interesting?
More, yeah. Just cooler.
Okay.
Sexier, frankly, yeah.
Okay, there you go. All right. Was it true? It could be. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, in that moment, yeah. In the context of that moment, yeah.
Like, to her, he was sexier and more interesting.
Sure. He's sexier to me, even, than how I feel about myself.
Okay, great. Okay. So, I'm speaking to Cass now. Do you feel now, Cass, like possibly Denise is going to think, and we'll bleep this out, that her other dude is sexier and more interesting than you?
No, there is no other dude.
Not even the husband?
No, not in this context. But just that I'm not worth it.
Okay.
Or that I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not worth the struggle.
Sure. Maybe you're not sexy or interesting enough to be worth the struggle?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Can you feel into the feelings associated with that idea? In other words, another way to say that is, how does it make you feel when this part of you, not your whole self, not your higher self, not the part that knows better, but when this part of you believes that you're not worth it, you're not sexy or interesting enough to be worth the struggle, how does that make you feel? What emotion comes up? Sadness, anger, frustration.
Sadness. Like resignation. Like, oh yeah, I know that feeling.
Resignation sits on top of feelings and distracts us from the feeling.
Right. So the feeling is just sadness, disappointment.
Okay.
Loneliness.
Could you feel a little closer into that sadness, disappointment, and loneliness just for a moment? What's happening now?
I'm almost like chuckling. It just, It doesn't feel very deep.
Okay.
It feels kind of fleeting. It feels kind of unreal or it doesn't have deep anchors. I'm kind of looking at it and then I'm like, oh, well, yeah. And I don't know if it's avoidance or if that's just that it isn't that deep. I just suddenly started to chuckle inside right before you asked me.
Well, the way you would know is if the anxiety was, let's say, what, like an 8 out of 10 when we started, like your general COVID anxiety right now.
Mm-hmm.
What is it at now?
4.
Okay.
Yeah, it like if...
So when the COVID...
I feel silly, honestly. And
when the COVID anxiety is at a 0, that means you will have processed all of the sadness about what you might lose if the Denise thing falls apart. What it means about you if you lose her.
Uh-huh.
See how there? It's like a weird thread that in your mind, you couldn't really get to that.
Yeah.
It's not, when there's anxiety, it's not about the thing the anxiety tells you it's about.
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say that. Like all those questions we had to ask to get to like, oh, what I'm really worried about is, you know, I'm not worth the trouble with this person.
Yeah.
And if I feel the feeling associated when I believe I'm not worth the trouble, that's sadness. If I stay with that feeling, the sadness happens more. You cry or you feel sad. And then it sort of passes. And then all of a sudden you're like, there's no anxiety left. So the fact that there's a 4 out of 8 left tells me there's a bit more sadness for you to feel.
Yeah.
But you flipped up into your head thinking,
yeah,
this is silly. I'm making a big deal. Why? And that's what we do. We minimize so we don't have to feel. But then the bummer of that is now you live with anxiety.
Yeah.
So when you have time and when you feel like it again, I would get connected to that sadness again. Do your best not to judge it. Stay with it. It's a part of you that feels this way, whether your higher self knows better or not. This is how that part feels.
Yeah.
And until they've had a chance to fully process it, there will be anxiety around this totally unrelated thing.
Mm.
Because anxiety always says, dig here, there's more. But you have to skillfully dig.
Yeah.
Here, the shortcut is, what's the feeling I don't want to be feeling, usually associated with a fear about something I believe about myself? In other words, if, you know, what's the fear? What do I believe about myself? And how do I feel when I believe that? Process that, and then you don't have anxiety.
Yeah.
So we got it down from an 8 to a 4, which is good, but I could feel you dissociating away from it and coming up into...
Yeah, me too.
Triple, what's your sign again?
Gemini.
Triple Gemini thoughts about it as opposed to, and it's hard.
Oh yeah, I'll be honest. I started thinking about like, oh, how are we going to edit this? Should I get permission to say the things? And how are we going to present this? Should I say things more? I just started, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm caught a little between being on a podcast and being present to myself with my dear friend helping me.
I know, I've been through this a lot, but myself, I've been you on this podcast many times too. I'm just saying you could give yourself permission to really go into it and then we can solve the editing problem later. That's really not actually your problem to solve.
I know.
There's a guy whose whole job is that. what that really is a convenient way to not stay with it.
Yep, I agree.
And we don't have to stay with it. I'm just offering that for the listener to understand.
No, I think I do very much appreciate the sort of call to action on how to get into
that's good
what's going on. And I think we cracked the surface of it and I now can do some work on my own.
Gotcha.
And sit with it a little more.
One thing I'll give you, and this is for the audience too, because remember, anytime I'm working with you, in my mind, it's not wasted time or too much energy on you or self-centered about you. Because somebody out there listening is like, oh, that's how that works.
Yep.
So we're always, it's a gift.
Yeah.
To someone. What I was going to say is that might help you and thereby others listening and always myself, it always helps me, is you could play this back and have the voice of Katie in the playback talking you through the moment. Because sometimes when you try to go through something like this on your own, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's something about the relational dynamic of having somebody talk you through it that takes us there in a way that doing it on your own is really hard to do.
Yeah.
Particularly for someone as relational as yourself.
Yeah.
So I might just play the audio and see if that helps a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you for, jumping into that.
My pleasure.
Story.
It's my pleasure.
Hey, what's up, y'all? So, I'm just going to say it. I developed a relationship with a cockroach. Yeah, I know. So I have a few roaches in my kitchen. It's a very tiny, tiny New York kitchen. And they like to come through or just hang out in the electrical outlets, which are just above the sink, like, you know, the sink and the counter area. So they're right in view when I'm at the sink. And there is in one of the outlets, and I'm just going to say, I have this plan to battle this, to get to, I have a great plan that I'm going to put in practice today. I'm on my way to the hardware store right now. But anyway, knowing that I had this plan of how I was going to stop this, a few days ago, so there is something plugged into, the lower of the two plugs in one of the outlets. And that forms a tiny little surface for a roach to sit on if they so choose, which this one did. So it was sitting on the plug that was plugged into the lower of the two plugs outlets. And it was just hanging out there. It wasn't trying to get my food. It wasn't trying to go anywhere. It wasn't scurrying. It was just relaxed, chilling with its little antennae, just like moving back and forth. And I could see it really clearly because it was just hanging out, not going anywhere. And, you know, I could see like the shape of its body, the shape of its little head, the little tiny antennae, you know. And I didn't know how to get rid of it in the moment because if I were to spray, I would have sprayed stuff I didn't want spray on. So I just left it and I left and went and did something. And then I came back and it was in the area and I came back again and it was sitting on the plug again. And it turned out that it found that spot that it really likes, which even during the day, it liked sitting on this plug. And because it wasn't scurrying or like trying to eat my food or surprising me or whatever, like it just was a little creature in my apartment with me, just hanging out. And I was just a creature hanging out. And as the time went by, I started talking to it like it was a cute little animal. And it was becoming a cute little animal to me. And every time I saw it again, I'd be like, oh, I really need to do something about this roach. But then I'd be like, oh, hey, buddy. And today, this morning, I got up, I went to my kitchen. There it was. And I was like, hi there. And it's like, you know, little antennae are going back and forth, like in a cute little way. And then I was like, this can't go on. This can't go on. So I got a cup and a postcard and I successfully put it out of my apartment, out into the outdoors. And I'm on my way to the hardware store to get the solution I plan on trying for this. But I don't really feel like I can tell this story to a New Yorker because they would just fucking freak out. And you, the listener, might be freaking out right now. But hey, it's what happened. Rami's rules.
How are you, Katie?
I'm good. Let's see, how am I? This is useful. I could look at a human design thing. I've been noticing this thing that I hope is useful for other generators. So, you know, the theater work started to take over, like producing is a lot to do, right? And I still have so much more to do. By the way, if you're listening right now and you're able to contribute to our GoFundMe for Six Line Studios, please go to the link associated with this audio recording, which I will give to Dez again and beg him to post. And I'm actually going to say it here right now. If you go to GoFundMe.com and search Sixth Line Studios, you'll find it. But here's the actual link as well. This is how much I need help. It's like I just need to take a minute and say this. The link is actually GoFund.me/. Here comes a lot of letters and numbers, everybody. I'm just going to say it in case there's one of you out there. GoFund.me/ 8, C as in cat, 7, F as in Frank, 4, E as in elephant, 3, 6.
Catchy.
And that was for you, Dez, as well.
That's catchy.
Okay. So anyway, the producing got, you know, is front of mind. Had all the actors lost one, have to talk to him, you know, lots of stuff. Have my lighting designer, got all the designers in place. The venue is there, except I can't sign the contract until this form from the state comes to me that says I'm officially a nonprofit. So, because we can't get the reduced pricing until we have that form. And then I can't open the bank account to put the check I got for the grant I won or earned into the bank account. So I can't pay anyone until that form comes. But I have no control over it because I did all the stuff and the state sends it when the state sends it. And it's supposed to be early this week and we'll see.
Oh, God.
So there's a lot of stuff. It's like, this is why the topic of what can we control? What can't we control? And like, let's get busy doing what we can control is really up for me. And I'm working with my own anxiety all the time on stuff like this. Is it like when I really sat down with myself and I went, okay, is there anything else I could possibly do about that form? No, I've called the company that filed it 3 times. They've told me the same information 3 times. I just have to wait. So then the next fear is, well, then I might lose the venue. And that means I might have to move the production to the summer. Okay, what fear comes? Okay, so what?
Right.
What fear comes up then? Well, then the fear is I'll lose all the actors because they won't be free then and I'll have to do casting again. Okay, so what? What's the fear then? They won't like me. They'll be mad at me. Or I won't find as good people then.
Right.
Okay. Now that's where I get down to that they won't like me. I go, whoa, I don't have control over that.
But they won't like me speaks to a deeper thing that also needs to be looked at for you.
Well, yeah. So stay with me. So if I have to go say to myself, if they don't like me, what do I think that means about me? I'm a flaky loser asshole who fails at life. Whoa, really? Is that true? And I have to look at that. And then I go, that's actually not true. I'm actually a pretty great person who does a lot of things successfully. Now, what's a reframe? I could have planned better sooner so that this wouldn't have happened. That's true. So that's something I could learn from and do better for the summer. But that's not something that justifies me hating myself. So if I come to self-hate, then I got to sit with self-hate. But for me, in this case, I don't actually hate myself. So I'm like, oh, okay, I see where I made some errors that had I done them differently, I probably wouldn't be in this position. And that helps me look at, well, how would I handle it differently for a summer production? So I have no problem, meaning I have no anxiety. Okay, so then there was a different layer of anxiety. But I had to take myself through all that to get down to the core baseline thing of like, oh, one piece of this is I'm afraid these actors will be like mad at me, not like me, and not work with me again.
Yeah.
Now, it may be true that these actors wouldn't work with me again. Okay, that would suck. But I do have something I could control there. I could call them and ask them, hey, how are you feeling about all this? I'm so sorry this happened.
Yeah.
You know, how are you feeling? Well, I don't really want to. Some people will say like, God, I'm sorry that happened. Like, can we do it in June?
Yeah.
And then I would discover in that conversation, my fear is untrue.
Right.
someone might say, well, I don't really trust you now, and now I'm afraid, and I'm not going to work with this company. And then I'd have to
put something else aside in order to do this, and now you're pulling the rug out, and that's really disappointing.
Yeah. And then I'd have...
Those are my fears.
And then I'd have to go, I so hear that. I'm so sorry this is that disappointing. You're right. I'd feel disappointed too. And I'll contact you again in the summer. And if you're willing to come back in, and if I can make a firmer commitment, I'll hope to get you on board. And if not, I'll understand.
Yeah.
Then another fear might come up, which would be they'll tell other people, and now I'll have a reputation for not being reliable, and then no one will work with me ever.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So I got to sit with that. And then I have to go, for me, what I do if I come to that is I go, is that true? And I go, well, it might put a reputation out there, and then I might have to just show up and do a better job next time with the next group of people. So I start to build a new reputation.
Yeah.
Because in other words, that's where, what do I have control over? Well, if I did a bad job and I create a bad reputation, what I have control over is learning the lesson that helps me going forward create a better reputation, because that's all I have control over. In other words, let's say there's a bunch of people out there now. All of this, by the way, none of this is happening. This is all, we're all talking about a fear-based reality that doesn't exist because the play is happening.
That's what everything is. Right.
Right.
That's what all of my stuff is, a fear-based reality that doesn't actually exist as well.
Yeah. And for me, examining it and feeling into it very closely makes it just, the anxiety all goes away, because you realize every single fear you get down to, there's something in that fear that you can feel that will lessen it. And then there's actions you can take that will make it better or not. And then you just grieve that or not. Everything is deal withable.
Yeah.
But the fear, if we don't face it and feel it and look at what can I control? What can I not control? What am I willing to show up for? What am I not willing to show up for? When we don't look at it and feel it, that's when it turns into anxiety. So coming back to my example and how I'm feeling like not that anxious, which is odd, given all the balls that are up in the air. If we're still on that one thread, okay, well, let's say I lose all the actors and then they lose faith in me and then they tell their friends and there's a lot of people out there who now think I'm unreliable. Okay, for the next, what do I have control over? Not their opinion of me. I don't have control over that. What do I have control over? I have control over what do I think of me and what do I do next? I think of me, I'm pretty great, and I made a mistake, and I'm going to use the mistake I made to learn and do better.
There's a granular thing in there about, you know, the cliche is, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have control over what they think of you, but, and I put a but on that, you do have control over how you respond or engage with. So in a sense, you can address for yourself how to be right in the world.
Yeah.
Sort of like right actions.
Yes.
Which has an effect possibly on how they
Correct.
Perceive you, but you actually can't do it for them. You can only do it for yourself.
Right. That's why I say, what do I have control over? I could call them.
Right.
Individually, each of them, and own up.
Yeah.
See, this is where anxiety comes a lot too, because people don't want to own up to making mistakes or being perceived as someone who makes mistakes.
Yeah.
But if you just call a person and go, hey, you know what? I fucked up the scheduling on this. I had too many balls in the air. I didn't think ahead correctly. I fucked us up, but I'm going to fix it. And we're going to do this in June. Would you be available in June? Now there's nothing to hate me for because I've owned it. But people don't want to own their mistakes. Why? This is the core thing. This is the whole thing, listeners. We don't want to own our mistakes because deep down we already believe we are the thing we're afraid other people will think we are.
Wait, say that again. I got lost in the labyrinth on that one.
Okay. We don't want to admit to people, make that call. I'm so sorry. I was wrong. I fucked up. Would you consider doing June?
Right.
We don't want to say that to people because we believe inside of ourselves the judgment that they have of us. We already believe we're a fucked up loser.
Well, and let's be clear. We believe the judgment that we project on them having of us.
Either way.
We don't know what they're fucking thinking most of the time.
Either way, we believe it. We believe it already.
Right.
So we can't call them because if they believe it and they say it to us, that'll prove what we already believe. So we can't confront it. My thing is, I worked on all that core stuff. I don't believe I'm a big fuck up failure asshole. I know myself. I love this lady. She's doing a great job and trying hard and sometimes fucking up. So I don't have anything to lose. In other words, I'll confront if I fucked up because I'm still a good person under that. And I know that because of 25 years of working on the core shit that says, and even if there, if I find it, let's say tomorrow I find a new nugget of core me that says like, no, this corner of me is hated and unlovable and shameful. I'm not even afraid to confront that because I know how to work with that and change it into self-love. So what I'm trying to say, this can sound like, I'm telling this in a way that could sound like me patting myself on the back for all this work I've done. I'm not trying to do that. What I'm trying to do is use me as an example, given that I've spent all this fucking time looking at this shit. Other people are like living their lives and going bowling and having marriages and stuff. I've been looking at this because I've had to. So I'm hoping it's fucking useful to someone other than me already. Jesus. I'm using me as an example to make the point that any anxiety, when you take it down, when you get intimate with what is the fear underneath, you can face that fear and it will transmute and you will realize you are whole and you are lovable and you can face what's in front of you. And the anxiety was just a red flag saying, dig into this sadness about what it means about Cassidy if XYZ happens. If you dig into that sadness and do that deep work, oh, I feel the sadness. This part of me feels sad, believing that I'm someone who's not cool enough to do the effort work for. Sad, 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 ow, sad, 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 ow. Huh. When the sadness moves and is done, you will be in yourself connected to the seat of silent wholeness that knows you are fantastic, that knows that sadness is the thing in the way that of you being connected to the you who's like, I'm pretty great. I'm not a saint. I'm not perfect, but I love me. And if a lady doesn't want to do the work because she doesn't believe I'm worthy of it, bye, because I feel worthy of it down to my core.
Yeah.
That's why it takes so much work to get to where, like when you really think about everything you'd have to cry through to get down to where at your core, you're like, I'm worthy of it.
Yeah.
That's maybe not for you, because you and I have different backgrounds. For me, I had so many times where I thought, there's no, fuck. Like I would confront another layer of, oh my God, I have that fucked up thing in me. Oh my God, I have that much pain. Or I hated discovering a new fucked up thing that happened to me, because I'd be like, great, that's going to be more layers of self-esteem I got to reintegrate. But then I realized, because it affected my life so directly, every piece of work we don't do to reintegrate the pain of the past becomes a block to the future we can't have. Let me be more specific. I thought, I'll give you, this is a perfect example. Let me be even more specific than what I was just going to do. All right. My relationship to theater and TV. I thought I'll be really successful in theater and that'll make me feel like a badass. And that badassness will, this is an unconscious thought, by the way, until it becomes conscious. That will make up for how bad I feel in general about myself walking around.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't walk around consciously thinking I feel bad about myself, but it was in there.
Yeah.
So I was blessed with not getting all the jobs I wanted. So then I got more miserable. Then I thought, well, fuck them. I'll show them. I'll get on TV and I'll be so successful on TV that I can say, fuck all you people that didn't cast me. Now, fuck all you people that didn't cast me is a way of saying, I don't want to have to feel sad about the jobs I didn't get. But let's back up, because the jobs I didn't get were already an attempt to not feel sad about childhood.
Right. They were not, they were there to fill a hole that was unfillable.
I was saying unconsciously, fuck you, sexual abuser, and my abandoning dad and my sociopathic mother. You didn't choose me. You didn't love me. Well, I'll be this successful actor and then I'll feel good about myself. Your heartbreak and your abandonment can't touch me, because look how cool I am and successful I am. Well, my problem was, thank God, when I was cool and successful at night by myself, still in pain in my heart from childhood.
Yeah, hear that story.
When I wasn't successful, now I had twice as much pain. So there was no getting away from the first pain. There's short-term getting away from it, and you think you're away from it, but it's just a palliative.
Yeah.
It doesn't treat the wound.
Think about people like, what's her name? I don't want to go to rehab. I said, no, what's her name?
Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse, or like Heath Ledger. You know, these are the most tragic versions of that. People right. who are at the top of their right. whatever it is, their artistic success doesn't mean shit.
Yep.
They're in massive pain at night, every night.
That's it. So, I mean, it's not that it doesn't mean shit. It means things in terms of they can get more jobs and now they have more money. And those things are nice. I want more jobs and more money. But what it doesn't mean shit towards is the wound. It doesn't change the wound.
Yep. I'm thinking it in terms of Enneagram for me, what we've been talking about, you know, the thing of me not being worthy or not worth it is sort of the thing, the core. And like, as there's a 3 and a 9 thing going on, and 3s tend towards 9s in certain situations, right?
Right.
The 9 thing is like, you don't count. Like, your opinion doesn't matter. You count yourself out of the equation.
Right.
You know, and that's been a big part of me. And the big fear of the 3 is when you get down to the center of yourself, there's nothing there.
Right.
You know, and even just saying that, like, fucking makes me cry.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, in terms of the Enneagram, like, everything we've done on this podcast, every time we've gone deep on some shit of some of my shit, it almost always boils back to that same core wound.
Totally.
And I don't know where that came from. I don't have the source of that. I didn't have sexual abuse or abandonment or anything, but doesn't kind of matter. Kind of doesn't matter where it came from. Maybe it does.
Well, I can tell you how to find out where it came from.
How's that?
But you won't love it.
I won't want to do it. Tell me and I'll say, fuck off. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. I'll tell you how I found mine through telling you the worst of me.
Uh-huh.
So like the 8, it does the challenging and the vengeancing to avoid getting obliterated because their innocence was stolen.
Right.
So because I had the clue, the Enneagram gave me this clue. This makes me tear up thinking about it. They give us this fucking brilliant nugget, this seed, this clue. They were like, mm-hmm. dig here, Katie. I didn't remember I had sexual abuse until I was like 37 or 35. I don't remember how old I was.
Holy shit.
33, maybe? But I was like, okay, wait a minute. I do have all this tendency towards vengeance. I do always push back. What could theoretically be under that? Well, the fear of being obliterated makes a lot of sense. So if in theory, I'm protecting against an obliteration that happened, I would only be this vengeful. First, I had to be able to own how vengeful I was and how challenging and how defensive I was in my way that I am. Okay, so AA helped with that a lot. It's like, you can't get out of a 4th step without seeing your defenses. Okay, so then I'm like, well, why would a person become that protective? And the fucking Enneagram said, because you were annihilated. And I went, no, I wasn't. How was I annihilated? But then it wouldn't leave me. It wouldn't leave me. It wouldn't leave me. And then years of therapy of like, I was actually annihilated in 5 different ways that took a lot of years to admit to and dig into and find. Then you have to integrate the annihilation. Not owning it is step 2 of 12. First, I had to see all the annihilation. Oh, I was sexually abused as an infant and a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. My mother annihilated me psychologically and emotionally every single day. And my dad annihilated me by like fully retreating and pulling his love away, being addicted to alcohol, and I didn't exist in his eyes. That's a lot of annihilation for a little tiny kid. So then you realize, oh, there's a lot of pain in there. It really hurts, by the way, to get annihilated when you're a baby and a kid and an infant. So if you're carrying that much pain, of course your MO in the world is going to be like, you're not going to fuck me up, motherfucker. I already been fucked up. I'm strong and tough now. So fuck off. Vengeance to you, because nobody's coming in here and doing that again. So it was all these little breadcrumbs of like, dig here. And then I found it. And then I dug. And I think like just the rest of my life, I'll be peeling away different layers of the pain of the initial annihilations. That's why I go through this thing where I look at, I'm like, my mind will say like, am I going to throw all those years of acting away? Shouldn't I try still for TV or should I? And then I look in reality and I go, okay, what plays are auditioning? And then I'm like, ugh. And I come back to human design and I go, because I'm a generator, useful questions for a generator. Does it make you feel more like yourself? Do you have energy for it? And is it satisfying? And for me, every time I look at a play, I'm like, no, no, and no. But when I look at producing this show, it does make me feel more like me. I do have energy for it, and it is satisfying.
Are you doing that?
Isn't that weird? Do you see that, dude?
You were just doing it because you're putting your fingers up.
I'm telling you, I also can't predict when it's going to happen. So for the listener, we're talking about, can somebody write in?
It's something with Zoom. There's like a new thing on Zoom where Katie gave a little thumbs up and then suddenly a thumbs up appeared next to her head.
An emoji that I didn't.
It didn't. I was like, you're not hitting the screen. What the hell?
I was listening to Armchair Expert and they had the same thing happen and they were trying to describe it and I'm yelling in my car, it happens to me too.
I had never seen it.
I'm wondering if it's because I have a brand new laptop.
Ooh.
And I think Zoom did an update.
Yep.
And so now it's like Zoom, if you do a thumbs up, it gives a thumbs up, except what?
Sometimes.
I'm doing one now and it's not happening. Oh!
Oh, there it goes.
There it is. So I don't know what the answer is.
I don't have it. I don't have that. Whatever it is, it hasn't been activated on mine. That was funny. We got distracted, but it was very distracting visually.
The point is, like, if you can honestly answer to yourself as a generator, is it satisfying? Does it make me feel more like me? And do I have energy for it? Then do it if it's a yes. But if you're doing a thing because it's going to solve a different problem, I would say actually resolve that problem and then ask yourself the same question.
Yeah.
You might. Who knows what happened?
Just what if we get into these, like, everybody just walking around with so much.
Yeah.
Just turds hanging off their shoulders, just covered in shit.
Yeah.
Just, and you, it makes you wonder why anybody does anything. Wait, are you doing that because you're wounded? Are you writing that TV script? Because are you, is your success fully based on pain? Are you?
I know.
Like, is anybody out there just walking pure in the world?
You know, it's interesting. I think if I had been able to answer the questions, is it satisfying? Does it make me feel more like me? And do I have energy for it? At a younger age, my trajectory would be very different. But, and I'd eventually wind up doing this work anyway. In other words, I don't know how to say that a different way. It's sort of like, I wish I had those questions earlier because they work really well for me now. But even if I had had those questions earlier, I'd still be doing this other work I did, because this other work I did also has... is satisfying, makes me feel like more like me, and I have energy for it.
Yeah.
It's because when I think back in my 20s, like, what did I have energy for? What was satisfying? What made me feel more like me? The answers to those questions are different things now. So what do you do with that? For me, I go, well, what do I have control over?
Right.
Not the past. Today. I have control over today. So long story long, coming back to the original conversation, I'm going to do my darndest to do right by these actors and do right by my venue and do right by myself to, like, produce this show well. And if it all goes to shit,
no one died.
I'll do the next indicated action to correct what needs correcting, own my part in it, do a better job next time, because at my core, I love myself. And the worst to what is there? So what if it falls apart? I used to, back in the day when I had sponsors, they'd say, so what, Katie, what if it all goes to shit? And I, like, could not understand them. I'd be like, I can't let it go to shit. It can't go to shit. And they'd be like, why not? And I'd be like, it can't. But then I learned through four-stepping, it can't, because it, what it meant about me, what I believed that it meant about me. If my things I was building went to shit, it would mean I was a big fuck up loser. And I couldn't live with that reality. But you have to see, I already believed that.
Right. So we got to fix, we got to heal that.
Yes.
Heal that belief.
Yes.
Because you ain't going to.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't address the belief with the outside action.
Right.
Yeah, you can't prevent it. You can't.
Well, in my case, I just had so much fragmented self-hate, fragmented I'm not valuable, fragmentation, so much that, like, I don't know. There was just a moment in time where it became clear to me where I went, all this stuff I'm doing it to prove to myself that I don't feel as bad as I know I actually secretly feel. So why don't I just feel that bad? And then in feeling that bad, it all started to feel less bad.
Right. And you can even learn that, like, Oh, feeling that bad doesn't even feel that bad.
Well, you have to that's what I was doing with you.
Yeah.
Is like, we have to get to what is the part of you that feels bad? What is the feel bad? Feel that bad. And then feel that bad long enough until it's just gone. That's the good news people don't know about. People think like, if I felt all my sadness, I would just disappear into sadness and I'd be sad forever. That's not actually true. What happens is you feel bad and then you feel worse and then it's done.
Yeah. I mean, on the surface level, that's so true about like a good cry fixes a lot. Because a good cry basically just, it's your body literally going, nope, we're just going to feel this.
Yeah. Letting it all out.
And if you're crying, you can't stop feeling it. It's there. It's happening.
There you go.
And so sometimes it's insistent.
So we'll wrap up today by saying, do your work and feel your feelings. And everything will, and oh, then
that sounds very familiar.
And then everything will get worse, and then everything will get better.
Yeah.
I promise.
Do you promise?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm the living example of it.
You are a living, standing example of it all. I love you, Katie.
I love you too.
You're one of my best friends, and we should hang out in human form.
We keep trying, and then you COVID scare.
And then I got totally freaked out. I mean, that one was right after
that
I got exposed.
Legit, yeah.
That was legit. I was fully exposed and I probably have COVID. Now I'm like, fine.
Well, let's try again this week, maybe?
Yeah, I might be able to one of these evenings.
We'll text each other.
I'll reach out to you, darling.
I love you.
Maybe tomorrow evening.
Oh, wait!
What?
Before we go, I have to say one more thing.
Oh, my God.
Best friend of the podcast.
Which one?
Rami.
I thought so, but...
I was saying to Rami this morning when they told me of their fucking triumph.
Which one? So many?
I know, but OSF in particular.
Yeah, wait.
That's a triumph.
Maybe beep that, because it's not...
No, I asked. I asked them.
That you could say it on the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They said yes.
Oh, okay, great.
Here, let me make sure. I'm going to read it to you. Yes, you can talk about it on the podcast, 10 a.m. today.
Oh, that's when they're talking to their agent. That's when they're telling their agent officially.
Oh, really?
Probably.
Well, they said, I will be a part of the 2024 OSF acting company. And I was like, oh my God, congratulations. You're a sniper.
So that means they officially sent their email to their agent because that's what we were talking about just yesterday.
Okay. And then I said, can I talk about this on the podcast? And they said, yes, you can talk about it.
Yeah. Super exciting. Rami just killing the game out there doing...
I mean...
Living all of our own fantasies, but it's their life and they can't live my life and I can't live my life through them. But sometimes I feel like I want to a little bit.
For sure. Rami's a sniper.
They're doing all the things I want to do. Like, oh, now you're going to OSF. Ah, shit. Ah, you played an FBI agent on TV. Oh, shit. You know, goddamn.
Well... What if it's an inspiration for you to step into some of that?
Yeah, could be.
Why not?
I have 100 reasons why not, but that's irrelevant. I can.
That's another processing session for another time.
Yeah, I mean, we've had those conversations. They're it's old. It's old stuff.
I hear you.
But it's not about me. It's about Rami. Super excited for Rami. They're going to be in Coriolanus at OSF with the Upstart Crows, which is an awesome group of people.
And for people listening that are not theater peeps, Oregon Shakespeare Festival is what we're talking about. Big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Broadway of the West.
It's the hot shit out here.
It's the hot shit that's not Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hi 10 to best friend of the podcast, Rami Margron. And you know, what I'll say about it is like, it's Rami's not 25 and Rami's living into their goddamn dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never too late, my friends. Get up and do some shit and do your thing and it just might work out.
Get up off of that thing. Dance till you feel better. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Were you asking for all of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod, @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
You're an alcoholic. You have to apologize. Step 9.
Step
9.
All right, George, all right. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. I'm so sorry that I didn't want your rather bulbous head struggling to find its way through the normal size neckhole of my finely knit sweater.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
I don't know, a little something called Step 9? Instead of an apology, he was bebopping and scatting all over me.